Okay, should we begin the discussion? We had left one element which was considered a kind of doubtful thing. But prior to Lavoisier, there was some interesting experiment which Newton does. You already know, of course, the experiment. Let's just, since you already know the experiment, let us just see how you would like to look at the three things that we have been asking. So, can you guess what this experiment is about? What was the famous experiment that Newton conducted? What is this?
Dispersion and reflection. We pass light.
Okay.
Hmm.
And that is what? Dispersion or diffraction?
Dispersion.
And then what happens?
They recombine into another prism. Find that again the white light.
Okay. So what does? So from this, what do you? Does it? So you can discuss this now in the form of an experiment. So we agree that it is an experiment, right? So what is the principle because of which, I mean, his argument was considered a clinching argument, or you can say very successful convincing argument. What is the convincing aspect of his argument? Yeah, so he was actually proposing a theory of light, trying to say that the light is also made of particles. Okay, light is also made of particles. And then he, and if it was made of particles, then he also proposed that there should be some kind of a bending when it passes from one medium to the other, and then according to which different, so he has to then of course mention how different colors are possible. So he proposed that different colors are due to different, so different sizes of the particles, and then he explained the various things about the whole thing. But one of the principles that he applies there is what is very important, very interesting, and that is a principle which is normally used, and that is a principle of what we call analysis and synthesis. So what is analysis and synthesis in this experiment?
Breaking up
the one single light source, which is white, into multiple colors. Okay, and then composing them back. So composing them back is the synthesis. And then you get back the white light. So essentially, what does it do? This is, in other words, consider the only way how proof is possible. So there is a theory of proof that is involved here. What is the theory of proof? Theory of proof is that if you want to know that something contains something, you should be in a position to decompose and compose it back again. So that itself becomes a proof of anything. So this is a very famous method that was used and used again and again by lot of people. So Newton in his book actually writes, the book that I am referring to, Newton is the book titled Optics, and there he writes a little deal about the methodology that science should be adopting, and in that he actually particularly emphasizes this as his method. So his method of analyzing something and then synthesizing back, and then, and in what way that will constitute a proof of something. Was there anything like this in the version? Was there anything like this in the version? Water is? Yeah. So now the question is it possible to combine water, hydrogen and oxygen and get back water? Saying that is not enough, right? You have to experimentally prove it, because science is all about experiments. So if this is the principle that he believed in, because as I said, Lavoisier is a Newtonian. So he believed in the principle so strongly. So what do you think could be the experiment which Lavoisier would have conducted to prove that given oxygen gas and hydrogen gas, how will you get water? Is it possible to get water from hydrogen and oxygen?
Yes, yes sir.
How?
In presence of catalyst.
What is the catalyst?
Platinum.
Heat. You heat what? You get hot air and hot oxygen and hot hydrogen, and you mix them, it will become water. What? Anyway, the spark was the correct thing. So, if you have both these gases in a chamber and you would introduce electric spark, you would get droplets of water in the container, which you would see on the edge of the glass chamber. So, this experiment was also conducted by Lavoisier. What?
1792?
Yes, sir. It's 18th century.
Lavoisier used electric spark. And I think Cavendish did this experiment. Water was made up of H2 and O3.
But Cavendish was much. Cavendish was when? Just about. Just after Lavoisier, maybe. Or around the same time. These were possibly contemporaries. I don't know exactly when. So now the idea of talking about this electric spark experiment with oxygen and hydrogen, what does it give you? The proof. I just come to your question. It gives you the proof. So that means, suppose once you say that something is composed, suppose if this water is composed of hydrogen and oxygen, if you want to prove it, there is only one proof that is possible. And that is, having separated them, if you put them back again and you get the same kind of substance, that means it is the same thing. So this is what is called the method of analysis and synthesis, which is very often done. And it is also done in theoretical analysis. In theoretical analysis, for example, deduction is called usually analysis. But sometimes what you also do is, apart from the deduction that you do, you propose something and you deduce the consequences. Okay, and then if these consequences were shown to be deducible, then you would say that the theory is correct. So even in that, there is also this interesting aspect of analysis and synthesis that that happens. But this particular point about the analysis and synthesis becoming a popular method that is widely used, of course, is not something that is unquestioned. Sometimes there is a break. You accept certain things because of some kind of breaks. It's not always possible to have analysis and synthesis proofs in science. But in such cases, we call for other kinds of proofs. Now, what other kinds of proofs are sometimes used in the case of science? One of the other things that comes is called coherence as some kind of proof. Now what is coherence? So coherence would mean, pardon?
Similar type of proof, same proof.
No, coherence doesn't mean similar kind of proof. Coherence also doesn't mean similar kind of result. So coherence means something like this. Let's say there is domain 1 and domain 2. Or let's say there is another domain 3. Let these domains be as different as, let's say, physics, chemistry and biology. Alright? So what should happen is, the kind of principles that you announce in D1 and the principles that you announce in D2 and the principles that you announce in D3, they should not contradict with each other. And that is the principle of coherence. So sometimes what happens is you accept things because the rest of the belief system is not contradicting with your beliefs. So it is not always possible to have very strong proofs of this composition and decomposition or analysis and synthesis. And sometimes you are happy with things like coherence. In fact, it turns out that coherence happens to be one of the greatest merits of modern science. Because you may not always have proof. Sometimes you also do not have experimental proof in some cases. But you still believe it because holding that kind of a belief will not have any contradictory contradictions, and therefore you start accepting it. On this basis. So in that sense, the experiment of light is also considered one of the great experiments because of its ingenuity, which sort of clinches and convinces people in terms of argument. And then, so for example, nobody would ever dispute Newton on that. Apart from that, there are similar such things that you see in various other disciplines. So you have proof because of analysis and synthesis. You have coherence as well. But there is one more important principle that we have briefly mentioned in the case of chemistry example that we took some time ago. But a similar kind of principle was also used by another biologist. Because, you know, not only that these principles are widely used in different places, but you also see that in different domains also the same principles are being used. So that's the reason why Harvey uses one of these principles. That means a principle that is normally used in physics, okay, is used by Harvey to do something. I mean, do you know what Harvey is famous for?
Blood circulation.
William Harvey. So William Harvey discussed, is a main person who proposed how blood circulates in the human body, or of course in animal bodies. So this whole idea of circulation has to be understood from a clear view. So what was the view before Harvey? From where does the blood come from? So the question of course was that we are discussing here. Let's see. Okay. Blood comes from food. Okay. In fact, even today, some of our grandparents always keep saying that, you know, if you don't eat, you won't get enough blood. It's part of common sense. So you have to eat in order to get blood. I mean, which is also in a sense not completely incorrect. I mean, because I mean, if you really don't eat, your blood won't have enough iron. It will not have enough thing and things like that. So that's a part. So now, what about this issue? Now, the other thing, of course, we already know is very well known that if you are when someone dies, not you die, when someone dies, you normally find out that the heart stops beating. The stopping of the heart was a kind of an idea to sort of, you know, find out whether the person is live or not.
Person dies, the brain stops working. It is not
reason.
Remember,
it is
a heart.
But do you really think that it is true?
Yes, yes, it is true.
How do you know?
How we know, yes, sir.
You have tested it.
No, we have not tested it.
No, sir, if heart stops pumping, brain will definitely die.
When?
If heart stops pumping, then brain will definitely die.
If heart stops pumping, the brain will definitely die. So what depends on what? What depends on what? Brain will work again. So it's interesting. So therefore, what is the? Heart is controlled by brain. Is heart controlled by brain?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
100%.
No.
Yes, yes, yes.
Actually, brain controls the heart and heart stands
controlled. Yes. Okay.
When you are brain.
See, the truth of the matter is, what we can find out later. But I know very clearly that the heart is not completely dependent on the brain.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because it has its own pacemaker.
Yes.
So the pacemaker is a self-generating pulse. So it generates on its own. It doesn't depend on heart. However, heart may control on the basis of several things. Like for example, by adding certain drugs into your blood, it is possible to, for example, increase the heartbeat and decrease the heartbeat and things like that. The blood pressure can be increased, blood pressure can be decreased, and many of these controls. So that doesn't mean that brain doesn't do anything. Brain may be able to control, but most of the time heart is on its own. I mean, heart starts beating very early in life and it continues to beat. So therefore, there is no harm in thinking that, you know, heart is an index of whether the person is live or not. Okay, because you know, you may not always get the whether the brain is active or not, which is very difficult to find out because brain doesn't beat. Well, earlier to this, there is also another important thing about what heart does, and which is of course known to be, it is supposed, while this is supposed to be the seat of wisdom, this is supposed to be the seat of emotion, love, affection and things like that. So point is, like you can say, you know, ye dilwala aadmi nahi hai means essentially that, you know, he has no heart. I mean, that means he doesn't have passion, he doesn't have emotion, you know. He also doesn't consider the other people as you know, as important as he is and things like that. So the point of course was here that when Harvey proved exactly what is the role of the heart. So when he did that, he applied very interesting physical principles in biology. So can anybody have any idea of what that experiment was? Okay, his experiment is very simple. His experiment was to, of course, have a good understanding of the anatomy of the heart, which means that he has dissected large number of animals as well as human bodies, of course after death, and has understood exactly how the whole thing works. Now, even before Harvey, the previous people have studied the anatomy of the body thoroughly, and at that time, I mean, people like Aristotle, Galen, they all gave a lot of theories about what happens to the eaten food, and you know, how it becomes turned into blood, and then how it becomes you know, part of the flesh, and so on and so forth. What Harvey did is an interesting work. So what he did, he actually does a kind of, what do you think would be the volume of the heart? So this much. So let's consider this much is the volume of the heart. Okay, I mean there is a saying that, you know, all that you have to do is, if you want to find out how big is your heart, you know, make a kind of a thing. I mean it's a not a bad guess. Let's say that this is exactly the size of your heart. Okay, let's say how many ml would this heart hold?
500.
My goodness, this much. 500 is this much. Okay, let's not worry about the exact value. Okay, let us take it to be something like, let's say there is about 80 ml, just for the sake of understanding. Alright, so let there be an understanding of 80 ml of water. The exact thing anyway is not going to be correct, because Harvey didn't measure it in milliliters, because milliliter, the unit is a completely modern unit. Let's say there is about 80 ml of blood is what you can get in the heart. How many times does it beat?
72 times.
Okay, 72 times. So it was known to Harvey also at that time that the average rate of beating was about 70. So if it is pumping blood at this rate for 1 minute, how much? You can calculate quickly. 5.6 liters. In 1 minute, you almost got the whole size of your blood. But heart beats all the time. Heart beats all the time. So the earlier theory was that, you know, it beats and then it becomes flesh. So what he did essentially is that a simple mathematical calculation. He wanted to show, if this is what was happening, then there must be a good source of replacing the blood that is getting into the flesh. So that means if so much of blood goes out in 1 minute, the food should transform into blood so fast. So from where is it coming from?
It's coming back again.
So it is coming back again. So that was, and how did he try to do that? Of course, he has to work out that entire model. So first, he does a kind of a simple thought experiment of this kind, which is simply mathematics. So all that he says is that if a person, the amount of blood that the heart pumps in 1 day, how much it would be? Can you calculate?
24 into 16.
How many liters is that? Calculate and tell me how many liters of that blood would be.
56 into 144.
8,000. So how big is that volume? Okay, we can all swim in that. So this was, so he basically proved that the whole idea was so absurd that, you know, even if you take a very small heart of even 10 ml size or even a very small one, it would be completely absurd. And of course, in the whole process, you have to also believe in one very important thing. So that is, whatever was distributed is also being collected. So what he did here in the course is that he uses this model that there is a distribution of blood and then there is a collection of the blood. And then he classifies the blood vessels on the basis of how they are getting into and how they are getting out, on the basis of the idea of the whole thing. And he finally proposes this kind of a hypothesis that blood circulation, actually the idea of that the heart is actually a pump and it has no other role in the body. And that was sort of again, you know, proved. Now in this, what are the things? Is it just the experiment? So can you experimentally prove this? Maybe today you can experimentally prove it. But at that time it was very difficult to prove it. So what are the other kinds of experiments he could have done? Now the question, for example, is that he has to prove that there is distribution, he has to prove that there is collection. So how will you prove that collection is there? Now take for example, so he said that there are arteries, okay, and there are veins. Okay, now that there are arteries and veins is well known even before Harvey, because the anatomy is very well known. People have been killing animals, eating them for quite time immemorial, so people already have a very good idea about the anatomy of the animals, and they also know the blood vessels, the sizes and things like that of not only human bodies and other things as well. Now the question here is that how would you know the direction of the blood flow? That is important here, because if you are an experimentalist, you are talking about distribution. Distribution should mean that the blood should be going away from the heart. Collection would mean blood should be coming towards the heart. Now how will you prove, I mean, given a body like yours? No, but the presence of the valve is enough to find it out.
Yes, sir.
Two way valve.
Yes, sir. Any one way valve. It is the two way valve.
Two way valve.
The AVR valve only one way valve.
Sensing.
So what Harvey did was a much more simpler one. So what Harvey did was much more simpler one. So what he did, he basically tied. Basically with a piece of cloth, he basically tied it up. Then what will happen? The blood from here should try to flow there. But what happens is, over a period of time, you would very clearly see that all the veins are outside,
yes,
towards the peripheral side of the body. They will swell.
Yes.
And that's a very simple experiment that you can do in just a few minutes. So all that you have to do is just hold it tough and you will see that all the veins will bulge. So what would that basically tells is that the flow of this blood back is not possible, because you are stopping them from flowing. So this is the kind of experiments that Harvey did at different parts of the body, and by blocking at various places systematically in a controlled manner, he exactly found out what vessel was doing what function. And then becomes a very important problem here. There are arteries, there are veins, and there is heart. But then how is it coming back? So one possibility is that the whole body actually is like this, that there will be, like let us say this is an artery, and this artery of course gets divided like this. And then of course there are these veins. They have to collect blood from the flesh, because let's say this is the flesh. So here you have the flesh, and here you have the arteries, and these are the veins. So blood from the body will be collected and will come back to the heart. Of course, you have the body. I mean, it has to come back here, and here let us say you have the heart. So this is the kind of picture that you have here. So this is your flesh. So if this is the other parts of the body, and the blood is distributed, and this is collected, what should happen here? As if it's the flesh is like a tank, where the blood is being poured out. So there is a missing feature there. So what, according to Harvey, he found out that since the blood flows so frequently, he predicted the existence of capillaries even at a time when he was not able to see anything through the microscope, because capillaries are microscopic. You cannot see it, and even if you cut the flesh, you will not be able to see the capillaries very easily, because they are so microscopic, small, very small tunnels, and they are not visible through the naked eye. So what he did, he actually says that these arteries will get divided and divided and divided when it enters into the flesh, and inside the flesh they sort of penetrate, and it's the same vessel. Okay, it's the same vessel which is so small, continues back on the other side, and then joins again. So essentially, you have a pattern of this kind. So the fine branches that you have of the arteries will again get together on the other side, and they become the veins. And so this picture was proposed by Harvey, and to sort of prove this, of course, he has no proof, of course, at that point to give about the capillaries, but he proposes it as a theory. So he predicts the existence that there are some small vessels inside. He doesn't have proof. Of course, he was proven right later on by once we have the microscope and other things, that people have already proven this part of it. And of course, as you could see here, the amount of blood should be constant here. The amount of blood should be constant. And that is the important point. And what is the meaning of that amount of blood being constant? That is, the blood that is going for collection and the blood that is coming back for distribution should be constant. And that, of course, we know today is the general principle of conservation. So what he does is, from physics, he says that there is nothing like vital principle or anything, because blood is considered to be some kind of a vital principle. So it gets converted into life, and that's the reason why we are living. And so there are all these theories that were based on that, and he says that that's not the thing that actually happens here. All that happens is that the exchange of food material happens through blood, and it is just a kind of a swimming house, and heart is nothing but a pump house. It's as good as a drainage pump, essentially. So
before Harvey, arteries and veins were known.
Arteries and veins were known.
And what were their what they were.
Of course, they would contain the blood, but they do not know in which direction the blood was moving. They do not have an idea exactly about how the circulation actually is happening.
But they knew that blood is coming, going out of the heart and.
No, that also they would not know. So Harvey was the one who proposed that the heart is the pumping body. So
as they knew the anatomy, before Harvey, anatomy was known. So they knew that there are tunnels which go which carry the blood outside and which carry the blood inside.
But they don't know which one carries and which one takes it out.
Sir, but then how did they give different names, arteries and veins?
The arteries and veins, the names are given not on the basis of they're based on their appearance. They're based on appearance, based on their structure. For example, what they said is that there are blood vessels. Some of them carry blue blood and some of them carry red blood. I mean, the descriptions were like this. So veins are those which carry blue blood, and the red blood is basically supposed to be the a kind of a pure kind of a blood, and that is, and they also know, for example, that the blood that is inside the body usually is supposed to be more darker than the blood that is outside. So these are the kind of comparisons that they did. All of them are on the basis of basically appearance, and there was no understanding, clear understanding of that. So it was Harvey who actually did these experiments which are controlled on the basis of to find out. He used to tie down, you know, small knots, both on animals as well as on live human beings, and tries to find out how the flow was affected and which of them were, you know, swollen and which of them are not and things like that. So that's how he finds out, and then finally he builds up a complete theory, which also uses, as you can see, the idea of conservation in here, which also says that matter is neither created nor destroyed. In the same way, also says that the blood is not created or destroyed. There is a stream of the same liquid that flows in and out of the heart, and then it sort of circulates. So this kind of circulation theory was proposed by William Harvey on the basis of these principles. So now, can you share your concerns with us so that everybody knows what the problem is? No, maybe you are discussing something which it is important for everybody else. Kuch nahi. What it is? So is blood blue?
No, deoxygenated.
Well, I mean, so why should deoxygenated blood be blue?
Oxygen is
mainly because of iron oxide.
Hemoglobin.
I mean, ultimately the color comes from
iron oxide,
sir, depending on how much
oxygen.
So now what we are now going to look at is apart from the Harvey's contribution in disputing the older beliefs about what circulation is and what is the role of heart, etc., there are certain other things that he does which are in coherence with what was happening around that time. And what were they? One of the thing, of course, was that he applies a simple calculation and tries to show that what, on the basis of the amount of volume that the body has, and he demonstrates that heart does pump by, you know, dissecting animals, and he actually shows that the pumping actually happens in front of people's eyes, and then blood does come out of the heart. So all these things were, so there was a very clear convincing and clinching experimental evidence that he manages to do. And then after that, of course, the entire theory is not completely shown to the people, and rest of the things are based on calculation. So he uses all these models of calculation, and then he applies the principle of conservation, and then he also shows that anything that has a collection should also have a distribution, because it's a collection and distribution gives you what is called a closure. Okay, and this is the closure that gives you the conservation. So ultimately he tries to put it all together in one single place by applying both theory as well as observation. So as you would see, in almost all the cases that we have discussed, there is always one thing that you should look at. One is that there is a theory, and that theories are sometimes assumptions, and all of them are not proven. So you basically strongly believe in something. So what is the thing that you are believing here so strongly? And what is the proof of conservation?
Experience.
So what is the proof of conservation?
Experience.
If you ask.
Experience.
So from experience, how will you prove conservation? No, but the point is that a lot of people will say that miracles is also an experience. So for example, when you look at magic is a good proof for you to show that, I mean, conservation is wrong. I mean, things appear from thin air.
Sir, we can reproduce something positive, like, so that conservation, if it is happening here, it will also happen somewhere. There is even a constant there. The idea of conservation.
So, but how do you do that? I mean, is it something that the consistency you're talking about? you're talking about this, but what are they? What is their nature? Do they come from and do they come from experiment?
Yes.
So which experiment was conducted to prove conservation?
Sir, this
Lavoisier's experiment was one, but that gives you conservation of in some context. On the basis of which, how can you prove that conservation is something that I would always believe in science? Now you have conservation in several places, like you have conservation of forces, you have conservation of energy, you have conservation of matter. Like Lavoisier is talking about conservation of matter there. He's not talking about conservation of energy. Like what if, for example, Lavoisier was proven to show that maybe it is coming from the fire, because you are heating, right? So you might always argue saying that whatever there is a loss of energy or wherever there is a gain of energy may be coming from invisible things. It's not necessary that everything should be visible to you. So you can always impute such principles and try to disprove that conservation is not necessary. Which is obvious? No, but the point is that what is the proof for it? So what I am asking is, what is the proof for this principle of conservation? You can't prove it. So then how can you base the entire science on something that you can't prove? No, but from pure observation, as we have seen several examples, from pure observation, most of science is not possible. Because counterintuition is one of the important characteristic features of most of the principles, including a lot of conservation principles. So how do you accept some principle of this kind and still say that you are doing science? Can there be a strong reason why conservation should be accepted as a fundamental, you can say, principle of science? Or is it necessary? Or if any of you have any doubts, I mean, is it really necessary to believe in conservation? Is it an argument or an assumption? No, I said that, but you don't have to believe it, right? I said that Thales' idea that every physical phenomena should have a cause, and that cause also should be physical. So by physical, you have some kind of an idea in the sense of, you know, that you'll be able to see, you'll be able to perceive, you'll be able to touch, you'll be able to experience. So everything has to be experienced is the one of the conclusions that comes out of it. But the point here is that what is the proof for it? Because, you know, we know very well that there are a lot of forces in nature which you can't see. There are a lot of things which you possibly may not be able to see. Sometimes you may not be able to touch. And if you look at particularly modern physics, I mean, modern physics has so many fictions. What are the fictions that you have heard about in modern physics?
Okay.
Yeah? Tell me more examples.
Wormholes.
White dwarfs.
Negative pressure.
Negative pressure. Anything else? What about the radiation that can penetrate everywhere? Such as what?
Gamma radiation.
Not only gamma.
The
neutrinos, for example. So the point is, on what basis do you accept them?
Because we can predict. There are solutions.
You know, this is a kind of a chicken egg kind of situation. In fact, when neutrinos were known to exist, they were also being posited because the laws do not balance if you don't propose them. Because it is in order to make sure that conservation is balanced that you proposed that positrons exist.
Yes.
You proposed that this particle must have been there only because, you know, otherwise your mathematics doesn't satisfy. Now on the other hand, you are saying that, you know, there are certain things that you accept and you don't see them. How do you know that they are physical? Okay, you have freedom to propose a theory.
Yeah.
Then I should call you a poet.
No.
Why should I call you a scientist?
There are predictions of it.
What are those things?
Huh?
No, but one of the things that possibly you could do is that, well, if you get a wild theory, I have no problems. Let it be as wild as possible, but then give me some consequences which will lead some correct experimental results. So in fact, if you see, most of the science happens that way right now, because many of the theories that we have, the first principles of those theories do not have any direct connections to our experience. Most of them are held for reasons beyond experience, including, for example, the principle of conservation. However, what happens is that this happens to be always holding, which is coherence. But what we do not know clearly is that, is coherence because that we hold conservation as something that you never want to break? So maybe the coherence that is happening, that you see, is only because you don't want to eliminate that trust in that principle. So what is giving rise to what? Is coherence giving rise to conservation? Or conservation giving rise to coherence? We still have no clear idea. So that is actually one of the main reasons why many of these issues related to the interpretation are still in doubt. But however, at least we can say that if there is one principle of science which will never possibly be falsified, we discussed falsification as one of the important tenets of empirical science. But would we ever falsify conservation? Or if you want to falsify conservation, what would be the conditions under which it will be false?
Many of the
conservation
principles are falsified.
Such as?
Mass
conservation is falsified. Yeah. Mass conservation is falsified, but by equating mass with energy.
Yes.
And then energy conservation is falsified?
No.
So there was a conceptual change. There was a conceptual change in terms of your conservation rules as well. So that conservation essentially was related to that, well, there is a possibility that matter at times may also produce energy, and then there are times when energy may also be able to produce matter. However, the total amount of mass and energy is conserved, remains constant. So that is of course the principle of conservation that we all accept today. So today's principle is not mass conservation, today's principle is not energy conservation. It's the total amount of energy is constant. That's what we take it to be the conservation principle today, based on our ontology and our beliefs at this moment. So the various discussions that you would be doing, you know, you would always find that there is an element of some kind of doubt that people may express on the basis of conservation. And the day you doubt conservation, you will have to allow so many things from happening, such as any miracle may happen. And so that was the issue that we started with when we started on the very first discussion about why Thales doesn't allow miracles in life. So Thales doesn't allow miracles in life only on the basis of this fact that he doesn't want anything to come. So the physical things must come from physical things. Both the cause as well as the effect must be from the same kind of principles. But then in the process we know that at so many places we have accepted so much of theoretical terms, so much of theoretical ideas to make sure that all our beliefs stand together. So one of the things that we are talking about is standing together. So standing together essentially is that even though you have several domains of sciences, you do not want to question the way how they would held together. There should be some kind of coherence, that is mutual agreement. So the moment there is some kind of a contradiction, there is a possibility. So whenever, do you think there are any possibilities where, for example, biology could contradict physics, or sociology could contradict physics? So is it possible? In fact, these were the issues that were discussed and being debated about. And based on this, you have what you call two kinds of worldviews. And one of the worldview is called mechanized world picture. The mechanized world picture is a picture where you do not let anything happen without a cause. But at the same time, you may also have a non-mechanized world picture. Now, is it possible for one person to hold both mechanized as well as non-mechanized world views? Well, the history says that yes, it is possible. So if it is possible, you would say that that person is holding a dualist view. So this is called dualism. Like Descartes, who proposed the Cartesian coordinate system, and is also one of the people who proposed the mechanization of the material world. So he said that matter and mind are two things. So mind is not made of matter, but it is made of something else completely. So mind and matter need not be coherent with each other. So there is a possibility that you may find all the material things be very coherent. So you may be able to find a physical cause for a physical effect, but that will be in the material world. There is a non-material world, the spiritual world, the mind world. And that is a place where it may not accept anything that you are talking about. So this is one of the major debates that are still not settled anyway. But then this is something that you have to always keep in mind, because there is enormous amount of problems when you start dealing with social sciences, when you start dealing with even biological sciences at some place. Sometimes you possibly have to explain, for example, how do you know what some substance is supposed to do? who tells the role of a organ in a body, for example? How are the functions attributed to them? So this whole mechanism is not clearly understood completely in mechanical terms. So you may simply be laughing at it as if saying that, you know, if someone is saying that, you know, this is all nonsense. But at the same time, the people who are claiming that this is not so is also nonsense, because they have not given any proof as yet. For example, people have not given any proof why cognition is possible, why consciousness is possible, why volition is possible, or whether these are all fictions. So that is how there is a lot of problem in the history of ideas in trying to interpret everything in terms of conservation. Okay, we'll stop here with this issue about the principles that science always helped them to be true, and the methodology that always helped to be true, which is of course that the principle of analysis and synthesis is not always possible, but in some places we have used coherence as a very important validation. But we don't know whether coherence is because of holding to conservation principle or otherwise. And then we also have these problems related to whether only the material world will be dealt by physics, and there exists anything other than the material world. So these are open questions. I don't want to commit on any responses to these questions. So now we have in our agenda something. When is your last final NSEM exam? 27th of April. So can you quickly look at a calendar and tell me how many weeks do we have? So before 27th, 1 week is a preparation holiday. So which means we should be closing our session when? We have 4 weeks?
Yeah.
We have 4 weeks available.
Yes.
Okay. See, 25th we have, and then we have 1, 8, 15, and the next week is a holiday. So we have only 4 weeks. And how many students are we?
11?
12?
No,
why he's gone to Delhi means? I mean, he'll come back, right? No?
Maybe.
Maybe or maybe not. Who is that?
Vivek.
So anyway, so let us count on 12. Let us count on 12. And we need 3 weeks. So which means 2 people before the break and 2 people after the break. So every day we can cover 4 people. So which means for 3 weeks, we'll be able to complete all the 12 classes, correct?
Yes.
So next week will be my last lecture, but also the lecture where we are also going to decide who is doing what. So if you complete your work yourself, then we'll be saving some time. So let us discuss that, and so next week you come back with your topics of exactly what you want to do, and so next time, next is actually the class from me, and after that you have to take the classes, and on every class there would be assignments also. Yes, because otherwise what happens, you will think that, you know, you are going to choose one topic and you are going to do only that topic, and you will not even listen to what your friends or colleagues are saying. Okay, so be very alert, and even when you are asking questions, I am taking notes. So if you are not active and you are not asking questions, that will also be considered into the account. ठीक है.
Started late or something? Not sure.
No, there was some today also. You know, they came at 9:20, and they came. It was we also gave some break in between because I couldn't take two continuous classes.
Yeah, no, I'm just tired. We have one more after that. Mm.